As one of America's largest financial services companies, Nationwide supports financial professionals with client-friendly resources and innovative solutions to help create greater retirement security for their clients. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Broadcasting live to New York, Bloomberg 1130, to Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 991, to Boston, Bloomberg 1200, to San Francisco, Bloomberg 960, to the country, Sirius XM Channel 119, and around the globe, the Bloomberg Radio Plus app and Bloomberg.com. This is Bloomberg Surveillance.
8:30 on Wall Street. I'm Michael McKee, along with Tom Keene. Our economic indicators brought to you by Commonwealth Financial Network. When it's time to change the conversation, talk with a broker-dealer, RIA, that's ready to listen. Call 866-462-3638 or visit commonwealth.com to learn more. There are no numbers today.
Then why are we doing economic indicators?
Because we have some indicators. We have the president of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, Bill Dudley, at 9:25 Eastern Time this morning, giving a speech on community development, but people are looking, maybe he'll go beyond that. There is Q&A. This afternoon, Robert Kaplan from the Dallas Fed is speaking. Tomorrow, Patrick Harker from Philadelphia, John Williams from San Francisco, and Jeff Lacker from Richmond are all speaking. A lot of Fed speak this week. And, of course, the numbers and the Fed speak all go together in people's mind as people want to know what's next from our central bank.
And the basic idea is retail sales has a lot to do with it. Could we get a
retail
negative?
Retail sales is Wednesday.
Mike, could we get a negative Atlantic GDP Now statistic off of moldy retail sales if we get moldy?
Well, you know, we could.
I don't know who we would talk to do that.
Well, we're going to ask Michael Feroli because he's with J.P. Morgan Chase. He's the chief U.S. economist there. And, Michael, we had the Fed minutes. As you write, they don't suggest any hurry to raise rates, but they do suggest there is a very divergent view of how strong the economy is and inflation threat is and whether or not rates will need to rise more than the markets are forecasting. Tomorrow's group, certainly, Harker, Williams, and Lacker, are all on one side. Dudley seems to be with the chair in being patient, but it does seem very unsettled at this point.
Well, I mean, there's always divergences of views on the committee, so I don't think that's anything unusual. But it was the case that in March, about half the committee viewed growth risks to the downside, about half viewed them as balanced, and you had even more people view inflation risks to the downside. Now, one thing I would say is earlier you said there's no data out today. I think actually at 11, we're going to get the New York Fed's survey of consumer inflation expectations, and I think that's kind of important in terms of some of these inflation risks. I think you look at the reasons they saw inflation risks to the downside, and one of them was because of dollar strength and import prices, and tomorrow we'll get import prices. And another one was that there may be a risk that inflation expectations could be moving lower. So I do think it will probably be interesting to watch that number later this morning.
Now, we have seen that number stabilize in, the last couple times it was out.
Yeah, so last month it did actually pick up after falling to an all-time low. Now, all-time is only – this particular series is only 3 years old, but it has in its 3 years kind of mirrored the longer history of the Michigan survey of inflation expectations.
Michael, I want to give you a major shout out for just terrific fundamental research, well-written, well-thought-out research on the new terminal value. You and a select few were way out front on this. The number one question I'm getting now in the streets, people stop me and they say, okay, lousy first quarter. There's a belief it gets better. There's a lot of doubt out there. How do we just presume second, third, and fourth quarter GDP make up for a moldy first quarter?
That's a good question. As you mentioned at the outset, the Atlanta Fed's at 0.1. We're at 0.2 for Q1. This would, if we get it, be the third consecutive quarter below 1% and probably will start to raise some questions once again about if there's something special about first quarters in terms of the seasonal adjustment or other issues. I think it's hard to know. We're mostly writing this up to just a confluence of bad factors. Now, as we look out to Q2, which is your question, I do think it's not just hopeful, you know, wishful thinking to believe that things improve. Some of the drags in Q1 are clearly transitory. Inventories were bloated. They're back into probably a better situation now. And with the dollar now down 5 or 6% from its peak, you may start to get a little bit of relief on the trade side. And also, I would say that the energy CapEx now has basically been shaved to the bone, so there isn't much left to cut there. So I do think as we look out to the second quarter and beyond, things look a little brighter than Q1. And, you know, one thing I would add just finally on that is, as I mentioned, we keep getting these bad Q1s. One thing we've kind of said is, you know, focus on the labor market data. And if it gives a conflicting signal relative to the GDP, you know, stick with the labor data. And that suggests that growth in hours worked. The momentum there is solid. And so we're feeling that things do get better as we get past the first quarter.
Well, we'll come back with Michael Feroli, because the question I want to ask you is, we wouldn't have enough time to finish it up here before we have to take a break, because I want to know why we're seeing this disparity between growth and employment. A lot of people have commented on that. The GDP numbers don't support the kind of labor market growth that we've been getting. And one of those numbers, a lot of economists say, has got to be wrong.
Yeah. Plus, Michael Feroli, isn't he making tea today for Chair Yellen and the president?
Wouldn't he like that? Wouldn't you like to be a fly?
Like in a Bond, a Bond movie. Feroli will go in black tie and put the tea down. Madam Chair, would you like some sugar?
It could be that the president and the Fed chair are sitting there going, Abby Joseph Cohen has the Capitals. Who do we have in the playoffs?
Well, we know Abby Joseph Cohen has the Capitals. They've been slacking off a little bit. But
I'm going with the Capitals. Since the Bruins didn't make it, I got to go with the Caps. So saving that. You know, Ovechkin is just amazing to watch.
The Canadians
didn't make it either.
Yeah. Full disclosure, for Tobias Lefkovich of Citigroup is in medication off of the Canadiens' collapse, the biggest collapse in the history of sport. Tobias, good morning. If you're listening, futures up 8. We're with Michael Feroli of J.P. Morgan.
This hour of surveillance brought to you by Mount Kisco Volvo. Visit MountKiscoVolvo.com. Here's Michael Barr with news headlines.
Mike, Tom, thank you very much. 15 former presidents of the American Bar Association are joining the push to urge Republicans to consider President Obama's Supreme Court nominee. In a letter to Senate leaders, the former Bar Association presidents argue that Republicans refusing to hold a vote is injecting politics into the courts that materially hampers the effectiveness and the operation of the judiciary part of it. The group also calls that Judge Merrick Garland as one of the most outstanding judges in the country. The top Democrat on the House Select Committee on Benghazi is endorsing Hillary Clinton for president. Maryland Representative Elijah Cummings spoke at a support rally yesterday in Baltimore. Cummings thanked Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders for his service, but
Bernie, I know Hillary Clinton. I knew her as First Lady when she and her husband, President Clinton, led our nation to peace and prosperity.
Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump is blasting the way the country chooses presidential party nominees. In Rochester, New York, Trump called the method corrupt and crooked. Global News, 24 hours a day, powered by our 2,400 journalists and more than 150 news bureaus from around the world. I'm Michael Barr. Mike, Tom.
Thank you, Michael. Time now for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Report and John Stashower. Now we know the answer to the question, who is Daniel Willis?
Yeah, he was kind of the secondary story. The big story, well, the one that we remembered most from the Masters, Mike, the collapse of Jordan Spieth, who had never shown any sign that that could be possible. Spieth was seemingly on his way to a second consecutive wire-to-wire victory, five-shot lead. Then two bogeys and a quadruple bogey on the 12th hole. Two shots in the water, another into the sand. He went from up 5 to down 3.
Four birdies in a row to end the front nine. I knew that even par was good, at least by a shot. And sometimes that makes it hard. You go away from the game plan that I was using on the front nine, and you just play a little conservative. And you know, I just put a little bit of weak swings on it, three holes in a row. All of a sudden, I'm not leading anymore.
Willett was the last player to register. His wife was due to give birth yesterday, but his son was then born March 29th, so he got to Augusta just in time to Monday. He's only the second from England to win the Masters, joining Nick Faldo. First tournament he's ever won on U.S. soil. Stay alive for 73 wins in the best regular season ever. Golden State had to win at San Antonio, where no visiting team had won all year, where the Warriors hadn't won since 1997. Golden State prevailed 92-86, Steph Curry 37 points. Win Wednesday over Memphis and move over 1996 Bulls. The Warriors break the record. Long season's almost over for the Knicks and Nets. Both lost. Islanders lost, which means they'll play Florida in the playoffs. The Rangers will take on Pittsburgh. Mets bats quiet all weekend, beaten by the Phillies 5-2. Yankees rained out in Detroit. With the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashammer.
John, thanks so much. A major shout-out to all of you that have assisted this morning in helping Francine Lacroix in London understand the beverage of my choice in college. Michael Boone's farm, Francine put out a nice clip art image of it. E.J. Gallo. Brand, it's a brand of apple wine, yeah. I'm told.
Oh.
Not that we knew Boone's farm.
I remember.
From a few years ago.
Yeah. Those were the good old days.
Francine was like, really?
The bad old days.
I said, yeah, Francine.
Do they
look,
have that sort of thing?
No, they do. I don't think they do. Yeah. No, I think it's illegal in Europe.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
Should be.
Bloomberg Surveillance with Michael Feroli of J.P. Morgan.
Bloomberg Surveillance brought to you by Eisner Amper, Hedge Week Institutional Investor, Alt Credit Intelligence. Fund managers reading these publications rank Eisner Amper high for excellence in client service. Find out why, EisnerAmper.com/excellence.
Global business news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Radio Plus mobile app, and on your radio. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. This update is brought to you by... It is brought to you by American Arbitration Association. Business disputes are inevitable. Resolve faster with the American Arbitration Association, the global leader in alternative dispute resolution for over 85 years. Learn more at ADR.org. Canadian Pacific Railway ending efforts to buy Norfolk Southern after the U.S. carrier rejected several proposals in opposition mounted to the merger plan, backed by investor Bill Ackman. European equities are mostly higher as Italian banks climb before a meeting to discuss cleaning up the financial system. Emerging markets advanced after signs of a pickup in Chinese industrial demand, while the Swiss franc weakens with government bonds. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. U.S. stock index futures are higher. S&P E-mini futures up 8 points. Dow E-mini futures up 63. NASDAQ E-mini futures up 20. The DAX in Germany is up 0.9%. 10-year Treasury down 5/32, the yield 1.73%, yield on the 2-year 0.70%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.7% or 27 cents to $39.99 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.9% or $10.70 to $12.54.50 an ounce. The euro, $1.14.60, the yen 108.07. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Tom and Mike.
Karen, thanks so much. It is on a Monday, 8:48 on Wall Street.
The following is from Bloomberg View. Opinions and commentary from Bloomberg columnists.
I'm Paula Dwyer, an editor with Bloomberg View. Almost lost in the tragicomic presidential election is the growing disdain toward big business. It comes through in the candidates' rhetoric, voter behavior, and the campaign issues. Business's Washington agenda, a corporate tax cut, trade deals, regulatory relief, and immigration reform is shot. That's not unusual for an election year, yet the anti-corporate mindset seems fiercer than in the past and likely to continue under a new president. The obvious example of this vibe is Donald Trump, who often demonizes companies for hiring immigrants and moving production overseas, both of which he has done, by the way. Bernie Sanders won 7 of the last 8 Democratic contests by calling for bank breakups, higher corporate taxes, and repeal of free trade deals. Even the normally business-friendly Hillary Clinton tries to out-Bernie Bernie with tough new measures to regulate Wall Street. Business has gone through similar waves of unpopularity, but this time it's more of an existential nature, with critics questioning the benefits that companies derive from global activities. All of this means business leaders must rethink their approach to politics and prepare for a battle royal if pressure continues for redistributive taxes that would harm corporate profits. I'm Paula Dwyer, an editor with Bloomberg View. For more Bloomberg commentary, please go to BloombergView.com or ViewGo on the terminal.
This has been Bloomberg View.
And Bloomberg View commentaries can be heard hourly weekdays on Bloomberg Radio. On economics, finance, investment, on international relations, Bloomberg Surveillance. Michael?
And we're talking on economics now with Michael Feroli, chief U.S. economist at J.P. Morgan Chase, and want to get to the question that I wanted to pose before the break. Didn't have enough time because I really want to look at this, Michael. You mentioned the idea for economists of choosing between GDP when it's extraordinarily low and payrolls when they're really good, as they have been. One of them has probably got to be wrong. How do we know which one is which?
Well, I think you kind of, just arithmetically, the difference between GDP growth and growth in hours worked is going to be productivity. And productivity will probably be negative this quarter, also was negative last quarter on a trend basis. So, which I think, you know, these numbers are very volatile quarter to quarter. Kind of smooth it out, and productivity is running sub 1% and has been for several years now. And so I think that's probably the more important message here, is that we just aren't seeing the type of productivity growth that we would like to, and that's why the jobs numbers look relatively decent, but the GDP number doesn't. You know, some people would argue that we're just mismeasuring GDP, which is true, but we've always been mismeasuring GDP and undercounting GDP. And I think the question is, is it getting worse? I haven't really seen any compelling evidence that it is. And so I think, you know, we have to take on board the fact that I believe productivity growth has shifted down over the last 10 years.
Well, what's the explanation for the first quarter blues? For the last couple of years, it was, oh, the weather was so terrible. Wow, it wasn't terrible this quarter.
No, it's actually quite mild. So there are some lingering concerns that some of the seasonal adjustment may be faulty or inadequate. I think there's a little bit of that. Our best guess, though, is it's just a matter of bad luck that we happen to have several negative factors all kind of hitting us in Q1, at least when it comes to the GDP adding up. So we are inclined to just to write this quarter off and say, well, you know, sometimes you just get a bad one. And it so happens that we've had them as happened in Q1s over the last couple of years. And there may be, as I said, a little bit of seasonality, but I don't think that's seasonal adjustment issues, but I don't think that's the main story.
The magic of the Friday publication of your weekend and Monday report on economics, the Melman-Feroli magic, is there's always some chart buried on page 7 that nobody else has. You did that a number of months ago with service sector inflation upwards and goods producing inflation downward. Do you still see that occurring? Are those vectors moving in those opposite directions?
Well, I think so. That has been the trend. And then as you look at the last two inflation reports for January and February, the CPI, the core CPI surprised the upside 0.3 in each case. And actually in both of those, it was due to goods pricing. And that was surprising, particularly since, you know, you've had this long period of dollar strength and commodity price weakness, and so you would have expected core goods to be soft those last 2 months. Instead, they bounced. Now, we do get another CPI reading on Thursday. We would expect some normalization back down in goods prices, but I think as you look over the course of 2015, it was definitely the case that services were moving up, goods were down, which makes sense given what the dollar was doing. Jan and Feb were a little bit of a surprise. We expect that to be partly offset in this week's report.
So your forecast is we're going to see inflation back off.
Yeah, I mean, just for this 1 month. I mean, I think you want to distinguish kind of the month-to-month readings of, you know, the intricate details of apparel prices and so forth versus the longer-term trends. So we think that March you do see a little bit of easing in the CPI. But then as we look out, you know, four quarters ahead, we do think that inflation trends are tilted upwards, but in a pretty gradual ascent.
Yeah, I mean, just that's the central debate at the Fed, is how fast is inflation going to go up?
Yeah. I mean, the models, the models would suggest it's going to be gradual. History suggests that, you know, these things tend to be stable until they aren't. I think we're kind of torn between that. Yeah.
Michael, in the time that we've got left, I want you to re-justify and tell us your single point understanding as a distribution around it of where the terminal value of the American economy is going. You and a select few really got out front of advising the nation and Wall Street and investors that GDP is going to be at a new normal lower. Where is that new normal lower now? Recalibrate what you did 18 months, 2 years ago.
Yeah, so currently we are at our view on potential GDP growth is 1.4%. What some of that reflects long-run demographic patterns that people have been expecting for a while. But some of that also reflects the fact that productivity has been exceptionally weak, and we expect it to continue to be weak going forward. Now, we do expect it to pick up from over the last few years. It's been exceptionally weak, and even we aren't that pessimistic to kind of extrapolate those trends forward. If you look at what's happened over the past 5 years in terms of productivity and labor supply, you'd probably think that trend GDP growth was more like 0.7 or 0.8%. Now, what we're saying is we do think relative to those the last 5 years, we should see a little bit of a pickup in productivity. But even, you know, with that pickup, we can't get much above 1.5 in our projections.
How,
Mike, that is
how far do you see this going?
Well, so our projections are basically on a through the business cycle. So we don't know when the next recession obviously is going to happen, but call it 3 to 4 years. So, you know, we're not trying to be too speculative here in saying what we think 10 or 20 year ahead GDP growth could possibly be. I think it's a bit extreme to think that anyone could have insight into kind of technological trends at that far horizon.
Micah Feroli, thank you so much. He's with J.P. Morgan. I'm thrilled to have him on, of course. And Mike affiliated with the Booth School and their wonderful conference.
Yeah, he's written some great papers for them.
I thought maybe he was going to be the fifth guest, like Pete Best in the Beatles. You know, Volcker, Greenspan, Ringo, and Feroli.
Yeah.
But,
or, you know, George Martin.
Yeah, yes, he could be. Yeah, that's good. He could be George Martin. I like that. Very good. Very good.
Oh, wow.
Michael Feroli on the new terminal value, that 1.4%, 1.5% statistic is game-changing for our American politics. Maybe that's some of what we see in the political derby. Mike, there's a primary tomorrow in New York. Am I right on
no,
that?
No. It's a week from tomorrow.
It's a week. Thank
seven
you.
Seven more days of watching political commercials that the rest of America has been seeing.
There's a debate on Thursday. Thank you, YU. Is it at NYU? Is it the Navy Yard?
Yeah.
Okay. Candidates in New York, they take the subway. It's Bloomberg Surveillance.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Johann Schmiegel, you've got the world's highest IQ.
Yes, 247.
Wow. Did you know that thanks to Salesforce with Einstein AI, everyone's smarter? Now everyone's an Einstein, just like you.
But I'm the smartest.
Not anymore. With connected data and trusted AI, everyone can give customers experiences they've only dreamed of. Oh, look, here's a few Einsteins now.
Hey, hi.
Hola, amigo.
Everyone's an Einstein?
It's okay, Johann. Let it happen. The number one AI CRM. Now everyone's an Einstein with Salesforce.